Campers, this is your host, Carolyn Norton. In our last episode, we dissected the big disaster and how poor decision-making can lead to a catastrophe. Many organizations get swept away by these disasters and never recover. Others get by with just a scrape. What separates the organizations that succeed and those that fail? In today's episode, we discuss what effective disaster response looks like and how organizations can emerge from the rubble after a disruptive business event. Joining us today,
I'm Daryl Mall. I'm a principal cloud architect with over 25 years of cloud and IT experience.
And I'm Rich Fowler. I've got 20 plus years of experience of working with our partners worldwide.
Hey, Amy McKay, Director of Client Sales. I've been working with clients, IT clients, for over 25 years.
And this is Eric Robertson, Director of IT, 20 plus years of IT experience.
Thanks, everyone. So the worst has happened. How do we react? What does a business leader do to determine what's critical, what needs to come back online, and what's not necessarily critical to start back up? How does an organization even determine how bad the damage was? Is there anyone they should be going to help? What do you do once the bleeding has stopped to bring the business back on track?
Well, I think Daryl talked about it in episode 2. Daryl talked about it earlier. And if you had your prioritization done correctly, then your marching orders are in front of you. You know what's bleeding. You know where it needs to be stopped. You know what can go forward and what can't. Like the question might be, what if we didn't do that? Now what?
Well, I think Eric hit it too with the documented policies in place. But if all of that has failed, I mean, I think the first thing you need to do is really assess what happened. So, assess what this disaster was. Was it Mother Nature? Was it a criminal act? Was it technology related, or was it physically affecting our plant and stuff like that? You need to first of all have a quick assessment of saying, here's what the issue is, and here's the spectrum of what's affected, and then you look at that and you say, how does that impact the priority of things? At what point in my priority list does this fall in of where that impact is happening? And if it's all across the board, then you need to start at your highest priority items and the things that are most important that you've deemed most important to your business. You need to get those back on track first.
Let's pretend I had a plan. I listened to episode 2. The disaster happens. I march in with my plan. And then I realize, whoa, I need help here.
I didn't account for this. I didn't account for that.
Exactly. I just got hit with something completely unplanned. Think of COVID as a good example. What does an organization do at that point? I've done everything I needed to do. I thought I had everything on track, but boom, got hit in the face and I'm not ready.
Well, the first answer is cry. That's always the best option. Once you get that out of your system, then you can go forward. But I don't know, especially if you're a business owner and small business folks specifically, they spend a lot of time up at nights and with stuff like this. That's livelihood. So we make jokes of it sometimes and we laugh, but this is somebody's livelihood. And if we think
hold
about
me, these, Rich.
Yeah. Come here, Eric. I'm glad we're on a virtual meeting. there are hundreds of people whose entire families are affected by this. This isn't a little thing. This is a big deal. So people have to pay attention to it. And sometimes to get them to notice that, it's the conversations you have to have early. But now they've got to come to the table and say, okay, did we have the conversations? If we didn't, we're going to have them in a hurry and under fire. So let's go.
Well, but I think the important thing to really do is again that assessment and figure out where something's wrong and what needs corrected and where does it impact your stack of priorities. I think the big thing to do is reach out to somebody in an organization, and bring in an expert, because you don't have, at that point, you didn't have the know-how or the knowledge to, realize that this was going to be an issue to begin with, which means you probably don't have the ability to make a quick decision and make great decisions on the fly as to how to remediate that issue or anything like that. At this point, you need to step back. You need to bring in somebody that's an expert in whatever happened, whether it was a fire and you need to get a building back in to code so that you can do this, whether it was ransomware and you need to bring in a security company to protect yourself from that and remediate from that, whether it was, you know, all the different facets, you need to have that assessment, figure out what the problem was, bring in an expert. And part of bringing in that expert, a big piece of that is, hey, I need you to get me up and running as quickly as possible in a proper manner to best practices. But I also need to know I need you to glean some information back to me as to how I prevent this from happening again in the future and how I recover, you know, if it ever happens again in the future, so that you do this as a learning experience.
I think
great points, Daryl.
Yeah, I think Daryl, you hit it right there. It's because we've had clients call, you know, it's like the Chicken Little, sky is falling, because they went to another company to try to help them get back online. That company had no idea what they were doing. They didn't implement best practices. And then they're in, a double bad situation, by the time they get to us.
And hopefully this is part of the plan, is identifying who to contact mm-hmm. when these types of issues occur.
Trusted vendor lists and valued vendor lists are huge.
Absolutely.
Yep. And now you can even get... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, now you can even get, retainers for people who are ready to jump in case of a cyber incident or something. So you can have them ready and willing to help and drop of a dime because you've already, have that relationship set up with them.
The worst scenario is you just got out of it and you're just getting out of it and you're looking for help and you're having, I'm going to use an old reference, you're going to go to the phone book and scrounge for resources while you're in the midst of it. It's not the best way. How do you know they're even going to help you? To Amy's point, do they know what they're doing? You're stuck in such a scenario where you're trying to get yourself out of it and you don't know who to turn to for help if you need that help. That definitely needs to be part of the planning process. That way, whether you have a strong plan or not, you have a contingency plan for your plan. So that if for some reason you need to go beyond the scope of effort, let's a scenario that happens that you weren't planning for, you can actually go ahead and have that list of contacts and resources, vendors, anything you need that's possible to help bring your organization back online.
Having that relationship is really important, because think about it, what happens if it's a regional, disaster or something larger than just your individual business? There might be 1,000 other companies that are reaching out to that same vendor or different, those types of vendors to get them back up and running before you, to do that. You don't want to be the person walking around on a Friday night trying to find something to eat and find out you needed reservations for everywhere in a 10-mile radius. Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you mean like a natural disaster scenario where everyone is affected at the same time.
Yep.
Hey, let's just go with supply chain problems on that one.
That's also a big one. Yeah. Yeah. Supply and demand is also a big problem. Yeah, absolutely.
And anybody that's tried to buy a new car in the last 6 months understands that chips need to be made and they need to come from somewhere.
Hey, I'm driving a gray car because of that exact reason. That is the only one that was on the lot at the time.
So everything works?
Yes.
So now we get to the point where we're trying to get through this. We had a plan. We know who to turn to for help, but how do we know how exposed we've been? What actually happened? We get that a lot too, where organizations say, hey, we're compromised, but we don't know the level of severity that it's been. Something happened, and I know something happened, but how bad is it? That doesn't necessarily get planned out. So how does an organization triage and properly determine what all has gotten affected in their org so that they can best address it?
I think that kind of comes back to some of the prioritization that we've talked about. You've got to go in order of importance, because if you spend all your time on the little rocks, the big rocks fall through. So, what I can tell what the big rocks are. Have we taken care of the big rocks, and then working our way down through the priority list until we get to the small stuff, and we can figure out what was there. And from the reaction, especially if you've got people in the field, they're going to help you know when they can't get into systems or can't get their job done or can't talk to suppliers and things like that. So you're going to get information coming in from lots of areas.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the bottom line is you bring in an expert according to whatever your issue is or whatever your impacted, system or process is. At that point, you want to make sure you're bringing in somebody who's been there, done that, seen that, and knows exactly what to do. Because the reality is, if you had the experts on staff to be able to answer those questions and do that, you probably wouldn't have ran into this situation in the first place. So the fact that you're in this situation means that you need some outside assistance from somebody who knows what they're talking about.
And that somebody who knows should be providing some sort of root cause analysis so that we can identify how we prevent it in the future. Figuring out why it happened is that big key in preventing it.
I'm going to relate it back to your basic business. And almost every business has an attorney and an accountant and a janitor. Jobs you don't really want to do yourself, but have to be done when it's time. A disaster recovery person or somebody like that, I think that that's a retainer that has to happen. And if a business isn't thinking about that now, they're going to shortly.
Agreed.
And I know many attorneys will be annoyed that I put them in the same category as a janitor, but that's too bad.
Well, to take your analogy a step further, it's almost like everybody has car insurance and cyber insurance is now becoming the norm. So, having that cyber insurance, okay, something does happen and now you have to pay for it. Well, how are you going to pay for it? Do you have that just those funds laying around, or have you kind of already paid for a part of it knowing that something might happen and now you're able to cover those costs? And those costs can be pretty big.
I circle back to the triaging aspect. It reminds me of doing EMS work where you got to look at what all has happened, who's critically affected, and get those guys addressed first, and then you work your way down the chain. So you're right. The planning aspect is really going to dictate what all you're going to focus on to bring the business back online. And ideally, the plan with the external resources, understanding the priority level, is going to help the organization come back online. And Eric, to your point, when you have the security, the cybersecurity insurance to help with whatever actually happened, if it was a cyber issue, you might have other insurance that could cover other scenarios. And ideally, your exposure is covered because you've looked at it from all angles. How do we deal with the impact to staff and employees, though? So let's say the organization plan is underway, but how do we make sure that our external relationships are addressed? We talked in our last episode of making sure that we're communicating effectively what happened and how an organization's planning to remediate and prevent it from happening again. But how do we also bring up to speed what's going on with the staff members, with our relationship with our clients and customers, so that they understand what's to go forward as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to take it back to episode two, but I mean, it all goes back to your plan and what you had that plan for. It's funny, communication, your communication piece of that plan is probably in this episode that we're talking about right now is probably the most important, and it's how you communicate, whether it's, when it's something just happened and you're just finding out about it, communicating to your employees, hey, this is what we need to do. This is what you don't do. This is what you do. And then you communicate out to your vendors, you communicate out to your, clients and your customers, but that communication plan is key. But it all goes back to what we mentioned in episode two, which is coming up with that plan and having that plan documented. I mean, I go through a lot of conversations with customers and they're like, you ask them the question, what's your RPO, RTO that Eric mentioned, your recovery point objective and your recovery time objective? And they're like, well, I can't be down for, more than 15 minutes, and they throw out these wildly crazy numbers. And you're like, okay, that's fine. That gives us a mark. We can go to that mark. But then we start bringing in the cost factor and we say, okay, for an RPO of 15 minutes and an RTO of, of 15 minutes, that's going to cost you, $1 million. And everybody's like, whoa, I can do it. I'm like, well, I can get you to a RPO of, one day and an RTO of 1 hour for $500. And they're like, what's the big difference? The shorter recovery points and the quicker recovery times that you get to, the more expensive it is. And you can find these balances. But part of that is, again, having that plan and having those honest conversations. How long can I be down for? If you tell me 15 minutes, it's going to cost you $1 million. If you tell me you can be down for a day, it's going to cost you $500. I mean, I'm obviously making those numbers up, but the numbers go change drastically. And having that conversation and having that plan of knowing what to do on how to get back after those disasters, whatever it may be, whether it's technical, you know, or physical or anything along those lines, you're going to have a dollar amount associated with that. And you need to, you know, as Amy mentioned, weigh those risks or what that financial impact is of the financial impact against what you're going to have to pay to, you know, to have a plan for that or to have something like that ready to go beforehand.
Well, and it's also the plan of, hey, okay, if we're going to go with, we can be down a day, here's the other 15 steps that we need to implement. And these 10 employees need to switch what they're doing, you know, in this job and start doing this, you know, to be proactive in that. So it all goes back into the big plan.
And I think part of this, and we haven't really addressed yet, is testing the plan and acting on the plan and making sure that the plan is feasible. And you don't know putting something down on paper is going to work until you actually try it. And having, again, a regular cadence of testing your disaster recovery of each of the pieces is a big piece of that, and making sure you know what, you know, how long is the estimated time for these recovery actions to actually take, because it's not just flipping a switch. There's going to be pieces that you either have to restore or turn back on, or, you know, so on and so forth, that unless you practice it and get better at it and know what those steps are going to be so that it's not so nerve-wracking when the issue does occur, you're now prepared for it because you've not only written out a plan, but now you've tested that plan and are somewhat prepared. Of course, there's going to be curveballs thrown in the mix, but you're better prepared than never testing it at all.
And I think we're forgetting one big piece of it that doesn't necessarily have to cost a company money. And we can look at, you know, FEMA for New Orleans and some other things. One of the big failures was communication to the world and to their own employees. If we've got marketing involved and we've got the press releases pre-written or at least storyboarded out, and we know it's going to happen, we just don't know when or how bad. But if we have that communication plan, both internally and externally, as part of our disaster recovery plan, then that's going to make a huge difference in the reputation of the business, the reputation of employees, because you've got employees sitting around, and let's be honest, no employee sits around wondering what's going on. They're all talking to each other, lighting up instant messaging, lighting up Facebook, lighting up everything they can light up. So, you know, rumors and bad information, misinformation gets out there quickly. So to have marketing involved and let marketing take the lead on what do we tell and who do we tell, I think that's a critical piece.
To your point, both internally and externally, for sure.
Correct. It's so, clients, it's vendors, it's all of it.
And making sure you have a communication platform in case your communication platform is the one that goes down.
I was about to say that. have a plan B, you know, outside of the normal.
Yeah. There's vendors for it. There's backups to backups. How do I send out these messages? How do I let people know? You know, if there's a fire in a building, how do I let all the people in that building know that there's a fire and they need to get out, and then check on the status of, you know, that they got out?
Yeah, or the issue is, you know, hey, the internet is down, which is would be a huge disaster to people. Mm-hmm. Hey, my VoIP phones don't work, my Facebook doesn't work, I can't do any, you know, the top 9 communication, you know, platforms that I'm doing don't work anymore. How do I, you know, still get information out to people?
Yeah. And it's electricity or natural disaster, a tornado, you know, comes through and you've got half, you know, half an area that's down. So
signals, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. Tell your nearest junior high kid. They can get messages out from anywhere.
Town crier.
So when an organization has a plan and they're in the midst of recovering, what are the employees supposed to be doing in the meantime?
Twiddling their fingers.
Part of that goes back to that communication. Part of that communication should be telling them what to do.
As you say, they have a plan for, like Amy mentioned, you know, hey, you know, the shipping docks are down because there was a fire, loading docks are down because there's a fire. Then, hey, we're going to go, you know, stage everything over here in this location and move different things over here. There should be a plan for what every person is doing.
And that should be part of what's communicated. And the employee should know what the disaster recovery process is for certain of these scenarios, so that they know, like, hey, if this happens, here's where I'm supposed to look for that type of information, or here's what my expectation is to move forward.
And one key piece that I would you know, say is important too is, you know, the higher up you are, the lower, the further away you are from those daily things or those you know, boots on the ground type of operations that are happening. But while this is going on, people should be paying attention to what's working and what's not working so that they can have that conversation after the fact to tweak the plan going forward. Because, again, that frequency of conversations and the fact that it happens, there's no conversation that is more important from a frequency standpoint than having the conversation just after something just happened. What did we learn? How do we prevent it from happening again? And how do we, you know, do better the next time something happens?
And there's always room for improvement.
That's right.
Always.
So somebody should be paying attention to, you know, not, you know, obviously the prioritization, again, going back to that keyword, is, you know, to get things back up and running and make sure everybody's safe and get things back up and running. But somebody should also be paying attention to how things are working and what needs tweaked moving forward.
Yeah, it's really listening to feedback from employees.
From employees, from vendors, and from customers, everybody. Yes.
Almost surveying how well did the plan actually work and where can it be improved, and just reiterating, you know, revisiting the plan and making it better. Ideally, only annually, but of course, after a disaster if possible.
And you know, I mean, you know, we're talking about after, you know, when the dust clears. The biggest thing is you want to be your company wants to be the one in charge of getting the message out. You don't want your competitors, you don't want random media to be the one reporting your issue, because that's going to all go back to whether it's your brand, and that's going to go back to, you know, whether or not your customers still respect you. That goes back to whether or not, you know, investors or, you know, everybody and anybody, if you want to retain some credibility and some of your reputation in that brand, you need to be the person out there not only trying to put, you know, your spin or but just being that person that's reporting this goes a long way to, you know, doing that in that communication plan of, hey, here's what happened. Here's you know, how we're reacting to it. And here's what we're doing to prevent it from happening again.
By doing that, you illustrate that you as an organization did have some thought leadership, spent some time planning and communicating to whoever it is that you need to communicate to what has happened and what's occurred. It just makes you look that much more organized. I can't remember who said it before, but these things do happen. It's almost expected from every organization. So it's not surprising when it does. But when you come out strong, leading the charge and communicating effectively, here's what happens, here's what's going on, and we're aware of it and we're fixing it, you just look so much better than having someone else fill in the gap for you, having someone else speak for your organization, which you never want to do, to your point, Daryl.
Absolutely.
So it goes to show you that planning is a big key, but we also understand that there might be scenarios where plans, for as good as they can be, there might be holes, there might be gaps or areas of improvement. And just making sure that after everything happens, you know exactly what you can do on a turn of a dime so that you can reach out for help if you need an additional assistance or you need guidance beyond what you've planned out for, you have that factored in as well. And making sure that after everything has been done, you take an opportunity to sit down and revisit what worked, what didn't work, what was missed. So that way that's incorporated into your new plan state and you're iterating off of that every single time. So that way the organization just continues to evolve and make sure that they're providing that safety net that the plan is supposed to provide.
Yeah, I mean, my closing thoughts would be simply, you know, get in there, assess the situation, assess what the risk or what the disaster was and what it relates to, and then reach out and bring in an expert. Because, you know, if something happened, that means that you didn't have it accounted for, or what you thought you had accounted for wasn't exactly the greatest plan. Reach out to somebody who's an expert in that area and have them come in, remediate the issue, give you the root cause analysis of why it happened so that you can prevent it going in the future.
And I always heard it was the ACA, if we're using Eric's acronyms, assess the situation, communicate our plan, and then adjust to whatever the situation throws back at us.
Nice. I like it.
Well, and I mean, even if there's not a plan, I mean, companies don't always have a plan. At least have a list of maybe trusted vendors so that you're not running around like Chicken Little with your head cut off, you know, in the middle of this disaster and you don't know what's going on. You're not going to leave the babysitter without, you know, giving them phone numbers to a couple of people or the doctor, or the pediatrician or whatever. So it's at least maybe have a short list of some people that you can call in the middle of everything.
And right now we're giving you that time to create these plans. So hopefully you're not just with a short list and you're taking the time to create these plans, create the response playbooks, identify those key people internally, externally, what processes are going to get affected, how all these interconnected systems that we have may be affected. Just try to get that big picture so you know if something was to happen, what's going to be affected. Because if you don't know, you're only going to find out once it does.
I think we can all agree that just start with a plan. It could be as light. Obviously, we'd prefer it to be robust, but start with a plan. No plan is ever perfect, but at least you've put thought into it and you have a starting point, and that ideally gets you into the mindset of planning for the big disaster.
The big disaster can be a devastating event for your organization, but it doesn't have to be the end of it. With proper planning and quick thinking, even the most battered of organizations can still put up a fight. To those organizations that can survive the worst of the worst, they have one thing on their mind. How do I prevent this from happening again? Join us in our season finale of The Big Disaster, where we put together everything. Creating the disaster-proof organization, developing a solid strategy for disaster recovery and business continuity.